Let me just say, after Vera distorting the belt, they're proclaiming the real world champion. I'm going to tell y'all with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment in my life. When you walk around this world and you tell everybody you're number one, the only way you get to stay number one is to be number one. And this is the only title in the wrestling world that makes you number one when you are the king of the WWE. You rule the world. Think about it like that, Mr. Perfect.
I got Ric Flair on the brain, and that's really the only reason that I wanted to open with that particular clip. That is Ric Flair, and for whatever reason, I have got that man. I've got his promos all on the brain, and maybe I'll talk about it here in a second. But let's get to the theme song. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast for Wednesday, September the 16th. So happy that you're here. Thanks for joining me. Welcome back to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me again today. Today's a little bit different, and I will get into why it's a little bit different here in a couple of minutes. But I wanted to start the show, as always, by thanking the patrons of the podcast. I had two new patrons join me. I'm up to, there's 24 supporters for the podcast now, monetarily speaking, and wanted to thank you both. So welcome to Mindy and Irina. I think I have that correct. Kelly and Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Mike, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jennifer, Eddie, Jenny, Christina, Ross, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much for being such avid supporters of the podcast. Without you, this podcast wouldn't happen. Without getting some of the support, 141 episodes in now, this is something that certainly takes an amount of time, an amount of energy, and some dollars to be able to pay for the equipment and pay for the publishing fees and all different things like that. So thank you so much for supporting the podcast. And couple things that I had on my brain. One of them, I was listening to this podcast the other day. So there's this, I'm a pro wrestling nerd, as you probably know from listening to the podcast at some point. And there's a guy named Conrad Thompson, and he does 5 podcasts a week with different wrestling personalities. I'm actually a patron of that, so I pay a monthly fee to be able to get early and ad-free access to their shows, but then also to get some bonus shows and different things like that. He does Mondays with Eric Bischoff, Tuesdays with the Enforcer Arn Anderson, Wednesdays with Tony Schiavone, that's my favorite one, Thursdays he does with Jim Ross, and then Fridays with Bruce Pritchard. But he also does these bonus shows. So Conrad, the guy who hosts these shows, he's actually a mortgage broker, so like a mortgage salesman, and he does these podcast episodes, these Ask Me Anything episodes, where it's him taking questions from the audience, which is really, really, I think it's a lot of fun because he's talking about non wrestling stuff and stuff that he's into, and he gets so many questions about sales. And he was just talking about kind of the attitudes needed for sales, and one of them was A, having thick skin, but then really two, just being somebody that can walk with their, you know, their head held high. Basically, if you can't believe in your own product, why would somebody else believe in what it is that you have available? And so I used to have such a good swagger for sales, and then almost got indifferent to it, and I got some of that swagger back, you know, which is great. So things have been going really good in the professional world in the last little while, despite a massive 3 or 4 month drought from COVID. I don't know. Hopefully things are back on the uptick. And so things are going really, really good here. Puppy's doing really well, of course. We've been camping a lot, which is awesome. Been loving getting out with the family and all that kind of stuff. And Zoe, the fresh into first grade, things are going okay there. Audrey, we're working on potty training. Lucy, the puppy, we're working on potty training. So Nevertheless, it is wild here, and this podcast is still here. And like I said, this week is a little bit different. So I was on a podcast called The Shift Show last week. So it aired last Wednesday or last Thursday. It's by Adriana Bucci, which that name may sound familiar because she was somebody that I interviewed on my own podcast several months ago and then coincidentally put together her own podcast that talks about basically it's recovery from narcissistic abuse, but there's a lot of crossover on TMS stuff, chronic pain, chronic illness, different things like that. So what's going to air today is actually the episode with me on it. So it's me being interviewed, which is a little bit different. So kind of a fun new idea, but if you have not listened to her podcast before, you should go check it out. And if you haven't listened to it before, this will be a new episode for you. And if you've already heard this over on her side, then you don't necessarily need to, but it's got a lot of my story in it. I get emails all the time, even though I feel like I do these once every few months, you know, Eddie, what is your story? This is another opportunity for you to be able to see it up close and personal. So without further ado, here is Eddie Lindenstein, brought to you by Adriana Bucci. So thank you so much. And I will see you guys again next week.
Hi, Eddie. Thanks so much for coming on my podcast this week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. So why don't we start off with just you introducing yourself and giving the listeners an idea of like who you are, what you do?
Yeah. So I am Eddie Lindenstein, and I do a podcast on chronic pain and on TMS. And I am over in the Seattle area. So from the United States in the upper left-hand corner, if you're not sure where it is that we are, in the Pacific Northwest, and avid weightlifter and exerciser and motorcycle rider, wannabe skateboarder, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So that's me.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. And tell us about, like, you know, when did you start getting chronic pain to begin with?
You know, difficult to say. I sort of always set the benchmark as the when did it get to a point where I couldn't ignore it anymore? Mm-hmm. And that was probably like late 2016, like actually right around this time in 2016. Oh, wow. The TMSer in me would have remembered exactly what the date was, but thankfully I don't.
So true.
Yeah. So it was interesting. I had a shoulder rebuild in the spring of 2016.
A surgery?
Yeah, I had sustained a injury in weightlifting where I dislocated my shoulder and
ouch,
tore my labrum and tore my rotator cuff, and I broke the top part of my arm, and I ended up having surgery. And the prediction for when I would be able to make a return to my sport was they said somewhere probably in the 10 to 12 months range before we would be able to clear you based on the damage that's in there. So wow. I rehabbed like a, you know, a Terminator, and I got the medical clearance at 4 months and 29 days.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. The challenge though was that, so I'd go in, especially in the final couple of months, and I would have these checkup appointments where they would check my range of motion and how far can I get before I have pain with the certain things that I wanted to do. And, I mean, my range was great, but as the last couple of weeks were coming along, I started getting different symptoms in different parts of my body. So I started having a lot of knee problems, things that, like, you know, and it's weird because I would get tendonitis pretty severely that I'd have to go on prescription meds, I don't know, 2-3 times a year probably. Wow. And I just kind of always felt that it was because of the sport I was training for. But at that time, obviously, because I was still in shoulder recovery, I wasn't competing in the sport that I had done.
Right.
So I suddenly had this mystery knee issue that I didn't really know what the scoop was. And I went and saw my normal doctor, and he gave me some prescription anti-inflammatories, and a couple weeks went by, and it was fine. And then that cleared up, and then I started getting sciatica, and I never had like a nerve injury into my legs before.
Mm-hmm.
So that one was pretty scary. And I remember we have season tickets for the University of Washington Huskies football team. And mm-hmm. it had developed a couple days before we were to go to a game. And when you go to a game, you park, I don't know, mile and a half away. And that walk was like felt like the longest walk ever, because my right leg was just, you know, it was pins and needles, and it was dragging.
Ouch.
And it was all this kind of stuff. And so that one really, really freaked me out. So I just started YouTubing videos on remedies I could do. And there were some really good stretches. Mm-hmm. And I did those stretches, and it went away in a couple days, which was cool. Mm-hmm. But then I started getting really intense back and neck spasms. And then I got the clearance for to resume all activity. And I told the doctor about all my recent stuff, and I said, it could be a referred pain. We don't really know what it is. And, you know, you'll probably be fine. And, you know, kind of left it at that. But that was sort of the beginning of when it got super bad was when the back of the neck spasm started.
Wow. So it was just like a random injury that had nothing to do with your initial injury.
It wasn't even an injury because it was just something that was like literally like, I was doing a workout and it began a few hours after the workout, but you know, I would work out 5 times a week. So like, you know, most days of the week I was doing a workout, like it was a workout day.
Right.
And no real explanation. The thing that I was doing was something I had done a ton of times. It wasn't anything that was new. But I attributed to that for a long time and just sort of felt like I don't know what I did, but for some reason my body's completely just locked in. It just felt like a boa constrictor was around my torso and I couldn't get it to release. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And how long did that last for?
That went on until I found, Sarno's book, which was 10 months later.
So, awesome. So how did you stumble upon Sarno's book?
there's a big 10 months in there because it involved going to see a couple dozen medical professionals. Doctors and osteopaths and chiropractors and massage therapists and Rolfers. And
I relate.
Yeah. I'd guess that I was like $15,000 or $20,000 in out of pocket. So I had insurance and, I'd traveled across multiple states to have like a procedure done on my neck, which was supposed to fix everything. And I remember the night that I had it done, I was like, that was it. I feel really good. And then I woke up the next day for the 13-hour drive home and I was worse than I was when I got there, which is like so soul crushing. Cause you know, you've now got this $5,000 procedure you have to pay for and it didn't,
and it didn't work.
A variety of things. And I went back to the surgeon who did my shoulder and he came in and he kind of, he gave me 15 seconds and he said, this is coming from your neck. And he said, I'll send some, you know, I'll give you some referrals. And that was it. And like, that was sort of where it got really scary was, if you don't know, I'm a total pro wrestling nerd and, I love it. And, it's very big in Toronto, by the way.
Not really in that scene, but I believe it.
And one of the injury and I parts of me wonders, did this slip into my subconscious somewhere along the way? But, cause you know, you observe something where people have their, necks injured and then that sort of becomes with you as an athlete, like this is the thing that can't happen. If that thing happens, then everything's going to really go, you know, you're not gonna be able to ride your motorcycle anymore. You're not gonna be able to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then that thing happens. So, the doctor told me that in February, of 2017. And I just sort of lived with that until, it was the end of May. It was the end of May. I don't know, May 25th-ish. Like it was right around Memorial Day. And I, the doctor for the University of Washington Huskies. She's very well known here. And I was reading a story in the news about our zoo, like our Woodland Park Zoo here. It was kind of a wild story. This new chimp got introduced to the other chimps and these chimps got in a fight and this one chimp sustained a really serious knee injury. And I was I don't even know knee injuries even happened in chimps. I didn't know that was a thing.
Wouldn't they happen, right? When you really think about it.
But the headline had read, Husky doctor goes non-surgical route with chimps or, you know, with chimpanzee or whatever. So I go and I read the article and, it was this doctor by the name of Kimberly Harmon, she's the head, doctor for the Huskies football team, which, it's not rare to have a female doctor. Obviously I feel like at least in my observation, it is very rare to have an all men's sport, a major division one sport in which their head physician is a female. So I thought that was pretty cool for starters. Mm-hmm. So I thought, this might be pretty unique cause I haven't seen a female doctor yet. And so, but I had called because her pedigree, if you go to her website, you go to her pedigree, it's very impressive just in terms of how many athletes she's helped. Mm-hmm. And I had made an appointment. They said that she was booked 2 or 3 months out. And so I just put myself on, you know, I got myself in. And then I got a call a day or two later that said, we just had 2 cancellations. Could you make it in today? And
amazing.
Absolutely. So I drove down there and I saw her and she walks in the room and I'm only 5'6", by the way. I know you're very, I know you're small as well. So we, yeah. so we both have that.
Short people unite. Yay.
But she walks in the room and she, I don't know, maybe 5'10", 5'11". So like, which is a pretty tall, you know, comes in with the lab coat and all this stuff and asked me to describe my symptoms. First of all, they had me bring in all my imaging and I had MRI. I had MRI, I had an X-ray, I had EMG studies, I had ultrasound studies. So I had a lot of stuff that I brought with me. And she's evaluating all this stuff, you know, kind of takes off, goes in the other room, takes to radiology. She's looking at all these things and comes back and does these different strength tests. And she does, I don't know if you've seen like the movie All the Rage, but there's clips of Sarno that's doing reflex tests. And so she's doing a lot of that kind of stuff. And of course, I had no idea who Sarno was at this point in time. And so I, you know, I just figured it was just another examination. Checks my shoulder strength and what's my range of motion like and all this kind of stuff. And she had said, you know, there's a lot of tone in these, in this musculature. And I didn't know what she had meant by that because I had, I felt like I had some atrophy going on. And so, she just asked me really, really bluntly, tell me what your stress levels are like. Tell me what your life is like. And we got into this whole conversation and I didn't really understand why she had been asked, you know, why she was asking those questions.
Doctors rarely ask that.
Right. In fact, in my experience, never had asked that.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I'm telling her about it and, I didn't see myself as a stressed out person. And I still really don't for the most part. But I had explained all the different stuff, which at the time, I mean, when this was going on, we had, so we had just found out that we were going to have our second baby and, you know, at the time we had a three-year-old, almost a three-year-old. And so they've got opinions of their own. And our dog was was in very poor health at the time. Aww. You know, I had a sales job and I had just come off a really kind of amazing run of so many consecutive years of being such a high performer in my company. And I had slumped during my shoulder surgery because I was dedicating all this time to rehab and way less time to work and all that kind of stuff. And I had taken 2 weeks off to recover from it. And in sales, it's kind of like, gosh, as much as everybody needs a vacation, if you take one, you're going to pay the consequences when you get back from that vacation for not, not being there when it, when you need to. So she had said, you know, that's a lot that's there. And she had said, you know, I can prescribe like some muscle relaxers or something like that in terms of like being able to get better sleep. She said, but I think that sleep is a really pivotal thing. You know, at the time I was going to bed around 11 and I was getting up around 4, 4:30, which I thought was adequate. But 5 or 5.5 hours is not. And I'll talk about that later on in the interview. But she had handed me this prescription pad or this prescription note, and it wasn't to go and get the typical anti-inflammatory or opioid or whatever I had been prescribed, you know, the oxy or whatever I'd been prescribed in the past. But instead it was the number for the sports psychologist that the team uses. And then there was also one for a chiropractor. And I'd said, I've seen so many of these chiropractors and they kind of all give me the same spiel, you know, come in, two, three times a week until the end of time. And I just wasn't, I had zero desire to go and do that whole thing again. And she said, you know, I wouldn't recommend this guy if he was just kind of the typical put you on the maintenance plan sort of thing. Go in, see him one time. But, you know, call the sports psychologist. And that's the route that I think you should go. And I kind of left that meeting, you know, not really overly sure. I even saw a couple of other chiropractors and stuff in that amount of time or physical therapists or whatever. But then I was just on Amazon 3 or 4 weeks later and I was searching for like mobility tools. And a recommended purchase was Healing Back Pain. And I read the reviews for it, which really kind of blew my mind. And then I bought the book on Kindle. And so I read it over the next 2 days and it was really, I certainly did not have a book here, nowhere close to that, but, it was something that really sort of like shook the branches of the tree and really questioned a lot of the stuff that I believed. And so being an athlete, one of the big challenges that you'll have is that you're so in tune with your body, which seems like a really good thing, but is a really detrimental thing in a lot of ways because you believe that these mechanical issues, you believe that these certain weaknesses and certain little tiny muscles that nobody would ever even think about, you know, your TFL and all this kind of other stuff, that's the root of all of these massive problems that you're having across the body. And you never think about like a systemic problem, which really is what, and I don't hear it talked about enough, but that's really what TMS is a, it's a radical systemic problem that riddles the entire body of a variety of issues. So it definitely took several months, but that's sort of where that's where I had found Sarno, was on a, it was on an Amazon suggestion.
Amazing.
And the thing that got my wheels turning was the doctor who had said, who just asked me that simple question, you know, tell me what your stress level is like.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. That's so awesome. You actually stumbled upon Sarno's book by looking for mobility aids on Amazon.
Ironic, you know?
That is so ironic, because I remember like the amount of times I searched for, you know, mobility aids or like comfort products or like, you know, the Theracane, all that kind of fun stuff. I never came across anything from Sarno, but I probably would have ignored it anyways.
Yep.
So that's so cool that like it actually caught your eye and you found the book that way. So that's amazing.
Yeah. So yeah, that was how I found it. And ironic that you list the mobility items in the Theracane. So the Theracane is the only thing that I actually still have. I never use it, but it's, all the other mobility stuff that I bought just takes up a lot of space. And the Theracane, I can just, I don't know if you can, I'm pointing at it right now. It's right about there. I have a squat rack behind me and the Theracane is easy to hang.
I think I see it. Theracane is hanging there.
It's easy to hang. And it's not taking up any space.
Exactly.
But I literally just a couple weeks ago, I cleaned out the garage and I threw away. I'm dumping the bin in the garbage. And I'm just counting like, that was $375. That was $250. Yep. And it was, you know, it was probably $1,200 in mobility stuff that I just tossed. And my wife was like, you can give it away or resell it. And I'm like, no, like this, it's kind of therapeutic almost to just sort of toss that stuff to the wayside and just say, that's it.
Totally. It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I was thinking when I, you know, packed all of my mobility aids, comfort aids, whatever you want to call them, up in a bag. And I was like, should I donate these? But then I was thinking, you know, like, I don't believe in this.
Yep. So why would you? Right.
So why would I? Right. Like, this is actually all garbage. Yep. So it's funny, but they're still in a bag. I'm still trying to figure out what to do with it, because it's such a shame, like all the money that we spend on this kind of crap, but
it's
then
crazy.
To pass that on to somebody knowing that it's all garbage and it doesn't actually work. It's like,
no good.
So once you found the book, how long did it take you to like figure out what to do? Like, what did you end up doing to deal with your pain in a TMS kind of way instead of the conventional?
It was pretty quick. The issue with healing back pain, the book, is that there's not any directives in it. It just sort of says, here's this thing. Here's what we know that it causes. Here's the different issues you may have. But there's not like there's not like a how to or you know what to do after that. Mm-hmm. So I actually did. It actually ironically ended up being very similar to somewhat similar to something that Sarno talks about in the mind body prescription, which is to make the very distinctive lists of personality. I think it's like personality traits and daily stressors and childhood stuff, But what I did in the beginning was almost treating it like an investigation. I would have, I'd run a list of every symptom or issue that I've had diagnostically going back as far as I could remember. Mm-hmm. And then on the right side of the page, I would just write what was going on in life at the time. I was trying to build a case. I was trying to rule out that stress incidents or incidents in life could be the catalyst for this kind of stuff. And I mean, like a 100, one for one correlation, there was always something that was very specific that I could remember. And so that was kind of all that I needed to really blast off into like 90 to 95% belief land. There definitely were hiccups in the few months that followed where I would go and see, I'd be like, well, it's been, cause the thing that I sort of expected to happen is that I would, you know, cause from then I bought like Zero Pain Now and I bought some of these other things that had tools that were attached to them, where I'd journal for, you know, a couple days and I would say I don't see any massive change here in my symptoms. Cause I noticed like an initial, I don't know, 50 or 60% drop in just the amount of pain that my neck and back was in, but I still had a lot of physical tension, that was in my neck and my back. And so I had expected everything to just vanish. And when it didn't, I'd be like, maybe it is this one little thing. And I would go see another chiropractor. So that probably happened two or three times and kind of lingered for a few months. But then I just started, you know, engrossing myself in belief stuff. And one thing I didn't do that I do see a lot of people doing is, you know, posting in a social media group about, I have such and such symptom and I believe all of it, but, And that, because that butt is really killer for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where they just can't seem to get out of their own way. So I would say that, it was probably a good 6 to 9 months before I was like, okay, we're at like 85-90% feeling better, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. And to where I don't feel like I have to have a daily practice. I felt like when I would try and do journaling for such and such straight days, or I would try and be really anything that was a regimen, was mm-hmm. would always kind of make me revert back to this thing isn't working. But when I sort of just kind of more integrated a lot of the ideas that Dr. Hanscom and Dr. Schubiner and a lot of these guys would put out, that's definitely more when I was like, okay, this is the thing, and it mm-hmm. is a lifelong thing. But instead of having acne or some of these other issues that other people have, that is mm-hmm. not necessarily pain, but it's an irritation, or, right. you know, an allergy or an asthma or something like that, where mm-hmm. you don't think, you know, you stand up and your back goes out, is completely different from waking up in the morning and you have a bunch of pimples across your face or something.
Right.
Or you can't stop sneezing, or you get colds a lot. Like right. those are inconveniences and they suck, but they're not, they're not the back going out. So it's just different for, certain people. I happen mm-hmm. to have a lot of the pain. So, that was sort of why it's sitting there punching me in the face every single day. But just knowing that it's just a daily thing that needs to be, managed and attuned to. At one point in time, I had a full belief that it's possible to be 100% symptom free for the rest of your life and that stuff will never pop up. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think that that's realistic anymore.
Yeah.
But with that being said, I'm never in pain. If I'm in pain, it's for 20 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. And I kind of know mm-hmm. the things that I need to do to get rid of it or mitigate it. And that's it. That's where we are. And it's become more of an is what it is kind of thing, mm-hmm. as opposed to this big, massive mountain that needs to be tackled.
Right. Yeah. No, like I love how you explain it that way, because a lot of the times when we have that chronic pain, especially when we have flare-ups after we've reached a pain-free, you know, that point of you go from the 85% that lingers to 100% pain-free, and then all of a sudden, 3 weeks later, there's a flare-up. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to go back into that mindset of making it into this whole big thing and thinking, okay, did I injure myself again or whatever? When, you know, you just realize like, actually, no, it is mind-body connected, what's going on in my life.
Yep.
And, you know, you can actually work through it. So,
yep.
Yeah,
certainly.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so once you were out of pain, I guess that is what would have inspired you to start your podcast.
You know, I actually started doing the podcast well before I was totally out.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, I had a good chunk of, hey, this thing works, or hey, this thing is the mm-hmm. the way, very early on. The night that I read Sarno's book, I knew that in all likelihood, this is probably the solution.
Yeah.
And actually, when I started to kind of take like an inventory of life and realizing that there's just certain things in my life that I just need to change or address. Mm-hmm. And like my mm-hmm. job was one of them that I just needed to address. So like if you ask my wife, she would say certainly on a whim. So let's just say it was on a whim, that I just sort of come to her one night and said, I need to quit my job. I need to quit it tomorrow. And like, mm-hmm. you know, I was making really amazing money, like well into the six figures, and mm-hmm. left without another job. And the whole plan was that I've always been really into fitness, and the plan was that I was going to become not a mobile fitness trainer, like a remote fitness trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some clients because I have a story of losing 100 pounds at one point in my life. And so I've got that. And so I attained some clients, but nowhere near what it would need to be a sustainable
right.
type of a thing. And I had spent a ton of money on marketing, hiring a marketing consultant, which turned out to be nothing, provided nothing mm-hmm. for me, other than just a big bill. And that
yep.
was, and that was kind of it. So I thought, what other way can I market that's, you know, not cost free, but very limited cost. And mm-hmm. I've got a background in broadcasting and radio. So I started okay. doing, the original name of it was the Eddie Knows Fitness Podcast. And awesome. The first couple of guests, it was largely, you know, the CrossFit world and talking about fitness regimens and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a Marine on, or an ex-Marine that was on that I know. And we were talking about him being in the Middle East and him being in Iraq in battle mm-hmm. and him losing friends in battle. And
wow.
He started talking about waking up in the middle of the night a lot in his 20s and in his 30s, mm-hmm. having really intense migraines. And I had asked him, you know, where do you think that the, like, what do you think is coming from? Like, where is that stemming from? And I sort of expected him to kind of give a, you know, a, I don't know, I eat too much gluten or I eat too much dairy or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever those things that people say mm-hmm. is. And he started crying, like really crying and saying that it seems to happen when he thinks about losing friends in battle.
Wow.
And I thought, like, this is such an amazing moment in the podcast and sort of a relatively big shift. And then a week or so later, you know, a week or 2 weeks later, I had Nicole Sachs on, and that did so well. And I really learned a lot from her and really admire her a lot. And mm-hmm. as time went on, it, even though it was called Eddie Knows Fitness, it now was like 1% fitness and like 99% mind stuff was what it became. So I interviewed Steve Ozanich in January of 2018, and then I needed to take a hiatus. My second daughter was on the way. Mm-hmm. So she was born in January of 2018. And I took a 4-month hiatus from the podcast. So I did 14 episodes and then essentially season one was over. Mm-hmm. But in that time I rebranded it. I paid someone to make me a logo and I changed it to the Mind and Fitness Podcast, which is what it's known as today.
Awesome.
So it's aired a new episode every Wednesday since mid-May of 2018, which is a lot.
Amazing.
I think it's at 100, and by the time people hear this, probably be at 125 consecutive Wednesdays, which is a feat.
That's
right?
Impressive.
It's impressive, especially when especially when it doesn't pay the bills. But it is a lot of fun, and it is a labor of love. And I have interviewed, I mean, the best in the field, the Howard Schubiners, the David Clarks, the Dr. Schechters, the, you know, the Christy Weepies, and then just dozens and dozens and dozens of these amazing recovery stories from people in every corner of the world, from Australia to New Zealand to all over Europe, to France, to it's been amazing. And I, you know, I get these emails from people that tell me these really incredible stories of these massive ailments. And some are ones that traditionally we may not associate with TMS story, like cancer stories. And then, and then kind of the other typical back pain, neck pain, foot pain, whatever types of issues. So that's sort of where we're at now. And the podcast is humming along and gets somewhere. It's tough to, the measuring stick that does whatever the name of the company or the discipline is that actually evaluates how many listeners are giving to podcasts. It keeps changing. The most recent change was they had, which is the right thing to do, by the way. They had said that now they're only counting when you open your podcast app and you hit play, that counts as a listen or a listener. It used to be that every time that you listen to a podcast from the same device, like if you went and listen, if you're listening to this right now and you really love this interview we're doing and you listen to it twice, you would have been counted as two listens or two listeners, but it's recently been changed to per device. It's one listen. So it's tough to gauge how many people are listening to it, but I would make a guess that 4 episodes air in a month and it's getting listened to somewhere around 13 or 14,000 times a month.
Wow.
So I'm thinking that it's probably 3 or 4, maybe 5,000 people that are listening to it on a regular basis, with 60% of that coming from the US. And then, you know, Canada's behind them and the UK's behind them and Australia's behind them. But there's a lot of times where I'll look at the report, the listening report, and it'll have these places where I hadn't even heard of that before. And I'll put it into Google Maps and it's like, you know, the middle of some island somewhere that I've had no idea even existed. So that's one of the really cool parts about the podcast.
That is so cool. Well, congratulations on having like that many listeners. Yeah. That is so impressive.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah. And like your message is being heard by the entire world pretty much, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Like the more people spreading this knowledge, the better. Mm-hmm. Like that is so awesome. What's been your favorite like recovery story that you've heard so far? I'm sure you've heard many, but do any stand out to you?
Certain ones that stand out to me, you know, I think that maybe ironically from Ontario as well, is Michelle Hintzberger's story. I don't know if you talked to her or you know her
story. I have not,
story.
No.
She's from Thunder Bay, and it's actually still the most listened to episode ever in the podcast. I think it was listened to almost 2,000 times the day that it launched.
Wow.
which proves Thunder Bay is a small community. And so basically, yeah, I think everybody in the town had listened to it. It sounds like she's pretty well known there. And when I was looking at the stats and I was seeing that, you know, 75% of listens came from Ontario, Canada. And I was going, amazing. Wow, that's crazy. So she, her TMS issues go way back. And I would encourage anybody, if you want to hear more about this, we did an episode in January of 2019, and then we actually did a second one that's going to air in a few weeks, so you can find it.
Awesome.
You can find it that way if you're interested in hearing more about it. But I knew nothing about her going in, other than that she owned a nail salon. That was pretty much all that I knew. And she started telling me stories about developing symptoms as a teenager and, you know, into her 20s and things like that, and that her brother had some mental health issues. He was schizophrenic, and her mother lost her hearing when she was a little girl. And so, you know, the instances of trying to talk to your mom and your mom doesn't hear you.
Yeah.
And kind of the lasting impression that makes. Because the thing is, like, you can be the best parent in the world, but if your kid they can't wrap their head around the fact that you can't hear them, there's not really a lot you could do as a parent.
Right.
I mean, like, sometimes I don't do it a lot, but sometimes I'll purposely ignore my kids.
Yeah.
and it's very troublesome, right? Then eventually, yes, Audrey, what can I do for you? But she, you know, she's telling the story and that she'd overcome her pain. But at this point, we're only, you know, we're 20 minutes into a 60-minute interview. And then she had said, you know, that she had gotten married in August. They got married August 25th or 28th or something like that. And then as she's saying this, I'm literally scrolling Instagram and I see these pictures of him. And then there's no more pictures of him as you're continuing to go through it. And she goes on to say that he died 6 days after their wedding.
Are you kidding me?
Unexpectedly. And she had said an accident. And I went I started looking in the Thunder Bay newspapers, that he was just out with his buddies. He was cliff jumping. And I think that he hit the bottom, and passed away. I mean, immediately. He was 30 years old or something like that.
That's horrible.
It really is. And, if you do go back and ever listen to the episode, I had a real hard time pulling myself together to continue doing the interview because it was not what I was expecting at all to hear.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of talking about it. And she had just said that, you know, she was in such like a dark spiral after that happened with Evan.
Of course.
That she had this flood of symptoms that started coming back. And she never would have had the experience of going through the symptoms before and knowing what to do with them, that there's no way that she would have been able to handle the sudden death of her soulmate. So it's a lot of that kind of story. And one of the things also that really opened my eyes that she talked about is that even after she'd found the Sarno stuff, she kind of had like treated the ways to which he would teach or other people in the space would teach. And you know, she would like try to journal for back pain, but then she would get another symptom. And then it's like, what do I do for my elbow or for my wrist or whatever? And so she eventually got to a point where she stopped doing all of that and had said, I'm just going to treat it as anxiety. This is a global systemic issue that is anxiety. So if my neck hurts, it's anxiety. If my foot hurts, it's anxiety. If my back hurts, it's anxiety. And that's how she treated it. And that's really where she started to see success. So now she's doing, you know, coaching and consulting and still doing the nails, and they're still as beautiful as ever. And which, by the way, people can't see this on video, but I'm holding up my nails for so anyway, that's probably my favorite. Surely my favorite story overall, because there's such an arc to it. And there's so I just really admire her a lot. And I would say of like the practitioners, probably Schubiner probably was my favorite to interview. But also Jim Prusak, he's a PT that's in the space. And to be a PT or like a physical manual therapist and to be working with mind body and teaching that. I mean, it's to study something for so long. I talked to Caitlin Michaels about this, to spend all this money and spend all this time getting educated in something and then sort of getting to the end of that and then realizing that that could have been a really big waste because you know, I'm now $80,000 in debt and the thing that I learned, I don't think it actually works. So, you know, kudos to him. But there's a ton of them. I mean, as I'm saying this, there's different ones that are coming up. But it's cool. I try and record like 3 to 6 episodes out from airing. So like sometimes I'll do the interview in May and it doesn't air till July or August. And I'll like the one that aired last week with Charlie Merrill, I sort of left when we had the interview. I kind of left it. Usually I'm like in a hurry. We end an interview and then I'm jumping back to work and I'm working on my work stuff and I don't listen to it until it airs. And that might be 2 months later. So I went back and I listened to that one that aired last week and I was like, damn, that was a lot better than I remember it being. Not to toot my own horn, but when you do this 140 times, you get a cadence to it and you almost forget that how these stories are so crazy. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, that's so awesome that you had so many amazing people on your podcast and continue to. Like, that is so amazing. And these are people like with big names in the TMS community. So it's like when you have actual doctors talking about it, you know, it just, it proves that point even more that the mind-body connection is a real thing.
Yes, definitely, for sure.
Yeah. So what, when you're dealing with flare-ups and stuff now, like what is your number one go-to to like try and deal with that pain when it comes?
So, like I'd said earlier that when I would have a, pain issue or something that was coming up, in the beginning I had felt like, gosh, if I just go journal, then I'll feel, you know, I'll feel better right when it's done. Mm-hmm. And then it wouldn't happen. And I would be like, fuck, like, why doesn't this work? I don't know if we can say explicit word. I was just thinking about that. And funny, because I just got a text from our babysitter who just said F-U-C-K.
No, you can swear as much as you want here. I swear on my solo podcast episodes all the time. So,
but the thing that has evolved and probably the thing that I think most people need to remember so that they don't fall into the trap of like, oh, this thing doesn't work. And so I need to go see a chiropractor, whatever. Is that A, I believe that it's cumulative. B, I believe that it needs to be it's a calming down of the nervous system. So there's a lot of, when you expand it to that, there's a lot of tools that you can use at your disposal. But the number one that I always will come to, if I wake up or throughout the day, I start to have, an ache of some kind. I always ask myself, how much sleep have I gotten in the last couple of days? And just knowing that Dr. Hanscom, there's so much in his books about the pivotal role of sleep in this stuff that, I mean, he's had hundreds of patients that have come to him for back surgery and he puts them on his plan. And there's a variety of things in his plan. One of which is that you can't talk about your pain at all for 6 weeks. He requires that you bring your family or the people that live with you in because they also cannot talk about your pain for six weeks. Not even hey, how's your back feeling today? It's literally, it is a cold turkey and he won't work with you unless you agree to that. You need to do expressive writing once a day, which is, it's journal. It's this fancy word for journaling. And then you need to be getting 7 or more hours of sleep per night, which doesn't sound hard, but how many people do you think you know out of, if you pick 10 random people, how many are sleeping 7 hours a night? So
nobody.
At this point in
people
time.
People do that?
Yeah, right, exactly. So
people can sleep that long?
Yeah.
Weird.
So granted, I don't get to binge watch any TV anymore. I hardly get to watch any TV anymore. But I make sure that I am at least brushing my teeth and walking towards the bed 9 hours before the alarm will go off. I'm accounting for an hour of probably awake time throughout the night. You know, I wake up, go pee, lay down in bed, think about the next day, whatever. And that usually takes about an hour. but for the most part, I'm getting 7.5 of like actual restful sleep every night. But the last couple of days, as an example, so 2 days ago, weekends I just sleep like total shit. And I think it's because I try and stay up a little bit later and then the kids are up at the same damn time anyway. so a couple of days ago, you know, it was 6 hours and 20 minutes. And then 2 nights ago, it was 5 hours and 25 minutes. And so yesterday afternoon, I'm just like, oh, God, I just feel miserable. But once I start taking an inventory, I'm like, you got this new puppy. You wanted to go on a date night. The date night was great, but it was, you're very limited on time. You've got your boss requiring all these extra things you need to do. You didn't get any freaking sleep. You're feeling like you're not doing as well in the weight room as you should be doing right now. All that kind of stuff. And it's kind of like, it's like the exhale when you do all that. And so now you can chill out. And I went to bed extra early last night, woke up today. I felt totally refreshed. I feel great again, which is good. So for me, the number one is probably sleep. Number two is, I mean, really, it's just kind of like a personal life inventory. And those are kind of the things that I do. If I feel like there's a difference. Sometimes I could have a pain issue that'll amp up, but I could also have a pain issue that'll amp up with headache is not the right word, but when I start getting obsessive about something, could be obsessive about being angry with somebody, it could be obsessive about a cell phone that I want to go buy, it could be obsessive about anything. It doesn't matter what it is. If I notice myself looking at or thinking about things I have to go buy or different, I mean, it could be anything. That's when I know that I probably should just journal, throw up on a piece of paper for 15 or 20 minutes. And then, you know, Hanscom has talked to me and when we've done podcasts together about the separation of brain to paper, and that literally you are clear, you're defragmenting this stuff that is in your head. And when I do that, I notice that I don't have those obsessive thoughts anymore, and it just goes away. And I wish that I had a better explanation than that. But
that's a great explanation.
but that's just sort of how it works. So that's kind of the maintenance plan for me. And also, you know, just being able to kind of feel liberty about telling the truth, not just to other people, but telling the truth to myself. If I think certain things are bullshit, or being able to call people out on their bullshit, or whatever those kind of things are, which you don't need to do. It's not a prerequisite. But to me, it is awfully helpful if you can be radically candid in your thoughts that you think.
Yeah.
Because much of this is not having the ability to be randomly candid. You know, kids will be kids, or, you know, whatever be whatever. And it's like, no, like, Zoe's being an asshole. If I could just say that, it makes a world of difference.
Exactly. And it's not like you're saying something horrible. You're just being honest about the present situation. And kids can be assholes sometimes, and it's okay to say that.
One thing that's funny is that my six-year-old has picked up. I mean, I don't have to yell or scream. I can just be short in how I talk to her. And we'll be sitting in the car, and she'll go, "Dad." And I'll go, "Yes." And she'll go, "Are you mad?" You know, she knows, right?
She can pick up on it.
Yeah, she can pick up on it. But that's one thing that her and I have worked on, is having the ability to ask those questions and to say those things, because the alternative is that she knows, or maybe just thinks that I'm mad about something and is thinking about it, thinking about the fact that I'm mad, but not asking me, which is repression, which is what we don't want. So just feeling at liberty to be able to say and ask the perceived tough questions is really important.
Yeah. And that's so amazing. Like, you're setting your kids up to not have chronic pain by allowing them to express their emotions at such a young age.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, but I can, in All the Rage, Michael Glinsky had said, I don't know if we can prevent it in our kids, but we can give them the keys to the gym.
Exactly.
Which is really what a lot of that thought is.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. It's, you know, as long as they know from a young age that emotions are okay, you know, if they end up at a point in their lives where they end up with some kind of chronic pain from some sort of repression that they didn't know was happening, at least they have that awareness that, you know, this is an emotional thing and it's okay to express those emotions, and that will make the pain go away, rather than, you know, spending $20,000-$30,000 on comfort aids, chiropractors, all that kind of fun stuff that you know we've both done, and so many other people in the TMS community.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know, and it's like I said, I talk to people all the time around the world about this kind of stuff, and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. I'll get just out of the woodwork, I'll get people that I haven't talked to for years that will send me, like, I actually got one. It's so funny that we have this interview now, because I think it was either Friday or Saturday. I got a DM from someone who my wife used to work with. We're friends on social media, but, you know, I saw her at a couple of my wife's work parties or something. But very, very nice. She's had a kid, and I think a kid on the way, or might have even had it. But she'd messaged me saying, "Hey, I've seen you talk about some of this kind of stuff. I'm having terrible," and then goes into all this jaw pain. And I was thinking about you.
Oh, wow.
Because you're like the queen of jaw pain.
And it's a great title, the queen of jaw pain.
So I sent her the interview that you and I did on my podcast. And a lot of times, like, people that come out of the woodwork like that I haven't talked to in a long time, they'll ask me for advice or help or point them in the right direction. But that's all that I'll ever hear again. And then they're still complaining about the same thing. They didn't, you know, nothing was resolved, because they don't want to go forth and actually do anything with it. But I got a message from her, and 2 hours later, that said, "Okay, I just finished that interview," which is awesome that she listened to it that quick, and asked me where to go. And I had just said the Mind Body Prescription, because the difference in that book versus Healing Back Pain is that he has sectioned off parts of the things he's talking about. And I just went to Because on Kindle, it's really handy because you can search. And so I had to search TMJ. How many times does he say it in the book? I think it was 6 or 7 times. I was like, this is because her doctor's recommending a $13,000 procedure to her.
Oh, God.
And I had just said, like, this stuff is all, it's really solvable, like, if you'll allow it to be. And here's a couple places to start. I used to get really, I don't know what the pronunciation is, evangelical, being an evangelist or whatever, getting really just so deep into it. What I started to notice is that when I would share these things on social media and I would get really passionate about it, spend all this time articulating this really nice, you know, well-worded, articulate, fact-based piece. And then I get 3 likes and it's people that listen to the podcast and that's it, right? And I'm like, fuck, like the like nobody believes it. So then I just kind of stopped and it's it's really helping with my, like, you know, with because sometimes when that would happen, I would just sort of get creatively stifled for the podcast itself. Because I'm like, do people even care? Like is it a thing? But I know that a lot of people care. And so it is kind of cool when I get those, you know, those kinds of messages.
Yeah, it's that's amazing that she actually listened to the episode you know, that's funny. What a coincidence that I'm literally interviewing you 2 days after that.
Totally.
That's so cool. And yeah, it's I definitely liked the mind body prescription a lot better than healing back pain out of Sarno's books, because he actually does mention TMJ in there. And that was the first time I saw something that's like not about back pain, because you don't really see people talking about jaw pain. TMJ, stuff like that in the TMS community. And then that messed me up a little bit at first when I first stumbled upon all of this, because it's like, okay, so it's for lower back pain. I don't have that. So jaw pain is special. Jaw pain is different, but it's actually not at all. And I'm absolute proof of that.
Something I think about too is that the nature of, you know, if you were to tell somebody that had jaw pain or TMJ, and I mean, most likely if this was the first time they were hearing about it, they would say, that's bullshit. There's no way that works. And maybe you were guilty of that. Maybe you were not.
Oh, 100%.
But if you were to go to a yoga class or anything like that, and the instructor were, you know, they were trying to get you into like a rebound mode or a, you know, basically a chill the hell out mode, could be the very end. You know, what sometimes in a yoga class, like a Kundalini class, they'll have you essentially do like a meditation at the end. One of the first things they will say is unclench your jaw.
Yes.
And like, it's right there, like unclench your jaw. but it would become so impossible to believe in the type of context that it could stick there. I think the stickiness is one of the things that causes people to not really buy in, unfortunately. Yes.
Totally. Yeah. And like 1000% when I first heard about the mind body connection, I was like, this is absolute fucking bullshit. Like, hell no.
Yeah.
So I was just like, because I came across the Curable app. So, you know, I just kind of bought the subscription without even like looking into it, without knowing about Sarno, any of that. I was just sheer desperation and, you know, sitting there dying in pain.
As
soon as it's like, there's an emotional component, I'm like, fuck this. Like, no way. So, but you know, the desperation and the pain obviously persisted. So I was like, okay, whatever, let's see what happens. And it obviously worked. Despite the x-ray showing that my jaw is in my ear, so it's like the structure really, really doesn't matter. And it's funny, like I too was evangelical about it when I first, you know, started getting out of pain, and I would post on my personal Facebook and my personal Instagram, and like no one gave a fuck.
Yeah, nobody cared.
Not one person in my circle gave 2 shits about the fact that I was out of pain. And like, they remembered my, like, I would post all the time about like, oh, here I am at fucking physio spending my summer here and like just all this kind of stuff. And it's like, does it not register with anyone that like, this is a freaking miracle? Like, holy shit.
And what's interesting about that is when I've gone back and looked at the post that I had made, like when I was going to rehab and I would, you know, I'd like check in at the rehab place and I would say, it's been so much pain and all this kind of stuff has been going on forever. Like, you know, there's 75 likes and 25 comments and stuff of, and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's, you know, that's a misery loves company kind of thing. That's a people, people gravitate to negative stuff. That's a, you know, they're, it's not really looking for a solution. And I, you know, I, it's frustrating because on my inner circle, like in my family, that's a lot of how they see it as well, you know, that right. that's not a real thing. And I used to think my wife really hated me talking about it, but it's funny because she comes to me with, you know, her and I'm just speaking hypothetically, but say mm-hmm. her best friend has this issue, or, you know, and a colleague of hers has this issue. And I like, all I really need are a couple pieces of their personality, and I can pretty well feel like I can make a diet, you know, I'm not a doctor on this stuff, but, if
but
I think
a
about,
TMS diagnosis,
yeah. Like if I think about the amount of hours, that's not just the podcast. I mean, surely I would have at least like a master's or something in this.
Of course.
I feel like, I don't know.
No, it's so true. Yeah. And it's like, you know, that's the other thing about this too. It's like, people want a doctor to tell them about this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they're not trained to even know about it.
Yep.
And if it's something that worked for somebody else, it's not like you're physically harming yourself. Nope. It's, you know, you're looking at emotional stuff. And it's like, if you've tried everything else and you're seeing people, you know, posting online about it, but you don't care to like it or whatever.
And the worst thing that happens is it doesn't work, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe you bring up a few memories that you didn't want to bring up, which, yep. you know, that's always a fear. But at the end of the day, those memories were already there. And at some point or other, they're going to come out. So you might as well incorporate that with curing your pain, essentially.
Yep.
And like, not suffering anymore. And it's so frustrating when I see people posting about their pain and stuff like that. I used to actually comment and say, check out Curable, check out tmswiki.org, check out Eddie's podcast, Caitlin, Nicole's podcast, whatever. And like, nothing. It's like crickets. So it's just like, okay, whatever. Like, people are just going to have to figure it out on their own.
Yep.
And you know, when they're done suffering and they remember that I've talked about this kind of stuff, then they can contact me.
Yep. Come on back.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, being on my podcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to put like all the links to your podcast, your resources, and all that kind of stuff in the description of this. But before we go, do you have any final words of wisdom to share with anybody who, you know, is in pain right now?
Honestly, it's probably just get yourself to a point of questioning everything that you thought you knew. And if you can get to a point of saying, I might have been wrong about that. Like, that's, to me, like, that needs to be the start of it. Because otherwise, and you can see my little one sneaking through, tiptoeing through. she's very sweet. But if you can get to a point of just saying, like, hey, I'm willing to question everything that I thought that I knew, like... Mm-hmm. That's where you need to be able to get. Like, that's the art of the vulnerability that people really need to have with themselves, is ultimately being able to send. I'm holding a princess wand, by the way. but being able to get there is so pivotal on it. And it seems like there's a small thing, but like that's the, not being able to get vulnerable enough to say I probably was wrong. That's a big thing that's preventing you from getting better.
Yes. 1000%. I could not agree more. Like, just acknowledging that, like, oh, what I thought I knew about pain is wrong, and that's okay.
Yep.
And here's a new perspective. And, you know, sometimes it's just a leap of faith that you have to take, but it's so worth it, because why keep suffering?
Well, that's another thing. I guess maybe a second one, like a 1A that I would give, is what you had just said, is if you can, after everything that's happened, or, you know, the things that happen in your life or situations that are going on right now or whatever it is, if you can add a comma and that's okay to everything, that's another piece too. There was a story that Dr. Hanscom told me about this woman who'd been wheelchair bound for like 37 years or something. And came into an appointment she had with him after she had had several, and being in a wheelchair and not being able to walk and all this kind of stuff, and walks right into the appointment as if nothing happened. And he was like, you know, the hell happened to you, basically. And she said, I forgave everyone. He's like, who'd you forgive? And she's like, everyone. And like, that was just kind of it, just very matter of fact.
Amazing.
Which is really amazing. So, and again, forgiveness is about you. It's not about the other. It's not about the other person. And so that's a good reconciliation.
Exactly. 1000%. Could not agree more. And yeah, when you say that forgiveness is not about them, it is about you. And it doesn't mean that whatever they did is okay.
Yep.
It just means you're letting go of that emotion towards that person, so you can actually move on with your life.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
That's what I got.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, we will probably air this very soon. Cool. And we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye.